Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have bad martinis for conservatives today, and we really could have four, Jim, because just when we thought the Patriots were going to go down to a humiliating defeat yesterday, they were up 25 points late in the third quarter. Of course, as just about everyone knows now, the Patriots came back to tie the game very close to the end of regulation. They won the coin toss. They took it all the way down and scored a touchdown to end the game in overtime. A lot of people chalk it up to the resilience of Tom Brady and the Patriots, the genius coaching potentially of Bill Belichick. Others say the Falcons got tight or too careful and committed a really costly turnover. My theory here, and you're going to have to confirm this, is that late in the third quarter, you may have thought this was in the bag, and perhaps your newfound loyalty to the Patriots started to wane a little bit.
Yes. Yeah, so for anyone who missed Friday's Three Martini Lunch, I decided that I was going to jump on that grenade for all of my fellow Jets fans and anybody else who roots against the Patriots, that if, based on my life experience, whoever I root for does terribly, then I would change allegiances and become a fan of the New England Patriots. Now, I did not find any actually New England Patriots paraphernalia in my house, unsurprisingly. I couldn't bring myself to actually spend money on it, but I do have a Gillette shaver, so I use that as my my icon of my newfound loyalty to owner Bob Kraft and Belichick and Brady and the rest. Well, and for about three quarters, Greg, I started to believe, and a decent number of people on Twitter as well started to believe, I had powers over time and space. I could actually influence what happened on the field of the Super Bowl simply by who I decide to root for. And I thought about how lucrative this could be as various people started bribing me to root against their team's rivals. Alternately, Greg, imagine what would happen if I started rooting for ISIS. They'd be out of business in a week. Sadly, the Patriots won, but even more sadly, I do not control the universe because I know I did not really give up on it. I gave a rote go Patriots before just about every play, much to the amusement of my sons and the people we were watching the game with. And it's really seemed to work for a while, but that's perhaps a testament to the indisputed greatness of Brady and Belichick and the rest of the Patriots. They could even overcome my jinx. So if it's, you know, it was an extraordinarily exciting game. If you're not a fan of the Patriots, it ended about that. If you're not a fan of the Patriots, then you, and you didn't like 2016, then it just continues the 2016 season into that. Now we can really start the year fresh and anew and with a new beginning and all that.
Wow. Well, there's always next year. Training camp starts in July for the Jets.
Hey, the draft. Come on, for a Jet fan, draft day is the most exciting day of the year. So, you know, that's just a few months away.
Yeah. I think we're both in the top five this year. So, good times. All right, on to the first bad martini now. And, Jim, this all started on Friday evening when a federal judge named James Robart out in Seattle said that he was going to apply a temporary restraining order against the Trump administration's executive order regarding travel from those seven terrorist-ridden nations. And once again, we see somebody who has gone to the Sally Yates School of Law, because if you go through the seven-page decision, he doesn't really cite any cases other than the ones that suggest that he has the power to issue a temporary restraining order and pass it along to the other courts. All he says is that the states have met their burden by demonstrating that they face immediate and irreparable injury as a result of the signing and implementation of the executive order. It adversely affects the state's residents in areas of employment, education, business, family relations, and freedom to travel. Later on, he says, in addition, the states themselves are harmed by virtue of the damage that implementation of the executive order has inflicted upon the operations and missions of their public universities and other institutions of higher learning, as well as injury to the state's operations, tax bases, and public funds. So not citing any particular case that suggests that the Trump administration doesn't have the power to do this. And now we get to the other part of the bad martini here. Trump essentially on Twitter undermining the legitimacy of the judicial branch of our government in several different tweets. The first one was, the opinion of this so-called judge, which essentially takes law enforcement away from our country, is ridiculous and will be overturned. The one tweet that did make some sense was, why aren't the lawyers looking at and using the federal court decision in Boston, which is at conflict with ridiculous lift ban decision. Then he goes on to say, because the ban was lifted by a judge, many very bad and dangerous people may be pouring into our country, a terrible decision. And in my estimation, the worst one of all, just cannot believe a judge would put our country in such peril. If something happens, blame him and the court system, people pouring in, bad, exclamation point. So, Jim, nobody acting with a ton of honor here. It's at the Ninth Circuit now, so we can only imagine what the Ninth Circuit's going to do with this. I think we probably know. But Trump needs to hold his powder dry and act like an adult, and the court needs to actually follow the law here.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack here, Greg. My first thought is I have seen a decent amount of arguments that I find rather compelling to argue that this is a bad policy, to argue that this is going to interfere with and impede and inconvenience a lot of people who've done nothing wrong, who are perfectly law-abiding and who are going to not be able to enter the country, which they ordinarily would be able to do without this executive order. And I've heard a lot of arguments this doesn't really mitigate the threat of terrorism that much, that in fact, if you really want to think about who you worry about the Algerian ancestry Frenchman or the Turk who's a German citizen or various other Pakistanis who grew up and are citizens of the United Kingdom. There are a lot of dangerous people who come from our European allies, who technically have citizenship of the European allies, but their loyalty is to someone like ISIS. And a lot of people have pointed out to me that, look, back during the Obama administration, it was a lot easier to get the France's, Germany's, and the UK of the world to block somebody. If you visited Raqqa, you know what? You're not allowed to travel the United States. No ifs, ands, or buts, period. I don't care if you were there, whatever reason you were for there, we've decided just that bit of travel makes you dangerous. In other words, there are smarter ways of doing this policy. What I haven't seen is any really compelling evidence that the Trump executive orders are illegal or unconstitutional. And I'm glad you mentioned Yates, because this judge appears to be continuing that philosophy. We often talk about legislating from the bench. The argument from the judge is basically, I don't like this. Well, you don't have to like this, judge. That's not really your job. Your job is to determine whether it violates previously passed U.S. laws or whether it violates the Constitution. And like I said, so far, we really haven't seen a very strong case for this. Trump, we're not surprised to the point that he's, going to blow off steam on Twitter. On the one hand, he's not the first president to get really frustrated with a judge and to just let it all out. And you know what? That's human. That's natural. I can't get too mad at him over that. However, when you do it on Twitter, you're doing it so the entire world can see. I mean, Nixon, Bill Clinton, lots of presidents rage and fume and, I don't know if they kick the cat, but, you have this anger and frustration about a court ruling that doesn't go your way. Having said that, it doesn't change anything. When he runs around saying so-called judge, you're putting a Republican in a position they cannot defend this. No, this guy's a judge. We can argue whether he's a good judge or a bad judge, but he's still a judge. This is a, frustrating turn of events because there are better defenses to be made of this policy. And when he says, if something bad happens, blame this judge. Look, by what criteria do we want judges making decisions? Well, I want them to make their decisions based upon the law. I'm a little bit worried if that judge starts worrying about what's the public going to think of this? Is the public going to blame me for the consequences of this law and this decision? Ideally, justice is blind. Justice is not supposed to be paying attention to the angry mob outside the courthouse. This is how you end up getting prosecutors prosecuting people on, say, police shootings, when the evidence does not really point to that, but there's a lot of people angry about that police shooting. So what Trump is arguing here, whether he realizes it or not, is arguing against objective justice and blind justice. And so you're right. I think this is a depressing set of circumstances in which a conceivably reasonable policy is turning into a typical partisan, mudslinging fest with people who, are willing to use any argument at hand, regardless of whether it actually applies to the circumstances.
Wow. So we'll see what happens as the actual case is appealed to the Ninth Circuit. A lot of folks assume this is coming to the U.S. Supreme Court. Question is whether there will be 8 or 9 justices by the time that case is actually heard at the U.S. Supreme Court. I'm sure that won't add any more intensity to the confirmation process. All right, on to the second bad martini now. And Jim, as is customary, the network that hosts the Super Bowl does an interview with the President of the United States. Fox got coverage of the game. Bill O'Reilly was sent to interview Donald Trump. Interview lasted roughly 10 minutes. This is the exchange that's getting a lot of attention today. Bill O'Reilly said that Trump has had a very busy start to the administration. No one would disagree with that. Trump says it's a busy week and a half. And then that included a phone call with Vladimir Putin, which then led to this.
Do you respect Putin?
I do respect him.
Do you? Why?
Well, I respect a lot of people, but that doesn't mean I'm going to get along with him. He's a leader of his country. I say it's better to get along with Russia than not. And if Russia helps us in the fight against ISIS, which is a major fight, and Islamic terrorism all over the world,
right?
Major fight, that's a good thing. Will I get along with him? I have no idea.
He's a killer, though. Putin's a killer.
A lot of killers. We got a lot of killers. Why, you think our country's so innocent? Do you think our country's so innocent?
I don't know of any government leaders that are killers in America.
Well, take a look at what we've done, too. We've made a lot of mistakes. I've been against the war in Iraq from the beginning.
Yeah, mistakes are different then.
A lot of mistakes. Okay, but a lot of people were killed. So a lot of killers around, believe me.
Jim, this is the type of moral equivalence that we used to hammer President Obama for, and rightly so. As soon as I heard that, I thought about Obama's get off your high horse, don't forget about the Crusades, when he was talking about the barbarities of ISIS. I don't know what Trump was thinking here, but if that's his instinct, that's really troubling.
It is. And it's very strange. Like, out of all the justifications you could make for greater engagement with Putin, when O'Reilly says Putin's a killer, that Trump could say, yeah, but we've had a lot of inconvenient alliances over the years, working with Stalin during World War II. Sometimes the reality of geopolitics, you have to work with people you find morally objectionable in order to achieve a common goal. Right. If he says any of that, nobody's going to mind. If he says, I don't know, the others, you cannot really carve the facts in a particular way that makes Putin look like a good guy. And the only way Trump can do that is to basically say, well, we're not that much better, or we're not that different, which I think almost every American would look and say, no. Right. Now, there are a lot of times where the arguments on the left are kind of hyperbolic and they say, oh, Trump is a Putin stooge. He's a sleeper agent. He's the Siberian candidate, you know. And most of the time that's overwrought. But what I think is a fair criticism of Trump is that there's something about Vladimir Putin that he really just doesn't like hearing any criticism of him. And I don't think this is because he's been bribed. I don't think he's been brainwashed. I don't think he's been blackmailed. I don't – that crazy BuzzFeed dossier. The argument that always seemed to make the most sense to me was Trump looks at Putin – maybe a little bit of envy, but a sense of like he looks at Putin as a strong leader. And he said this explicitly during the campaign. Putin's a guy who gets things done. Putin is a guy who's respected. I mean, picture, you know, your mafia don. Respect, right? Nobody crosses Putin very much, or else they end up with polonium soup and they end up getting dying terrible, slow, radioactive deaths. But in Trump's mind, there's something like, hey, that guy knows how to run his shop over there. This guy really knows what he's doing. And that there's kind of this, he thinks he's going to respect, you know, Putin will respect him peer to peer. I also expect at some point Putin and Trump will become frenemies. They will have a very ugly breakup when Putin does something that Trump perceives to be a slight or insult in some way. It could be totally wrong on that, but that's just my reading of the two personalities here, that each one of them wants to be the alpha. And at some point, one or the other will perceive that the other is not treating him like the alpha, and, great conflict and consternation, hopefully non-nuclear, will flow out of that. So, there is this weird trait in this almost this obsession in Trump's mind that he really can't let anybody get away with bashing Putin too much, and it takes him into some strange and dark and really rhetorically disturbing places, and this is one of them.
Wow. All right, Jim, let's move on to another really exciting and encouraging bad martini. We go back to the Trump-O'Reilly interview on Fox, and this was simply Bill O'Reilly asking Trump what can get done and when.
Can Americans in 2017 expect a new health care plan rolled out by the Trump administration this year?
Yeah, in the process, and maybe it'll take till sometime into next year, but we are certainly going to be in the process. Very complicated. Obamacare is a disaster. You have to remember, Obamacare doesn't work. So we are putting in a wonderful plan. It's statutorily takes a while to get. We're going to be putting it in fairly soon. I think that, yes, I would like to say by the end of the year, at least the rudiments, but we should have something within the year and the following year.
This is a critical year to get things done because next year is a midterm election year. And once that gets over with, you're on to the 2020 presidential campaign. But it's not just Obamacare. This is the lead of today's New York Post editorial. Bad news, Congress is putting tax cuts on the back burner for now. A big risk. House Speaker Paul Ryan says lawmakers will focus first on replacing or repairing Obamacare and on President Trump's infrastructure plans and only take up tax bills sometime in the spring. That means Trump won't be able to sign anything until before the fall at the earliest if no other delays pop up. Jim, these are two issues that have been talked about on the right for a very long time. It's been 7 years since Obamacare got signed into law. Obviously, we were hoping that he would have lost in 2012 and you could just do a repeal before it actually kicked in. But Republicans should know what they want to do at this point. And tax reform, if you let it slip too long, can slip away entirely.
Yeah, let me make a qualified defense of congressional Republicans on this one. On tax reform, yeah, there's really no excuse because you want these tax changes to kick in for the 2018 tax year. The 2017 tax year is pretty much – we're already well into effect. People are doing their taxes for 2016. But you basically want the tax – if you are conservative and you believe that tax cuts stimulate the economy – you give people more money in their pockets. They go out, they spend it, they buy stuff. You know, companies do better. They hire workers. There's this happy, virtuous cycle. You want that to begin as quickly as possible. Now, obviously, there's a lot of complicated moving parts to this. There's a real uprising over the border adjustment tax and lots of issues like that. So, yes, you're going to have to take your time to get it right. But there's really no excuse for a Republican Congress not being ready to pass a tax cut within 1 year. On repeal and replace. I actually had a piece last week in pointing out that, look, this is after talking to folks out at the Koch Network meeting, listening to senators like Lankford and Mike Lee and Pat Toomey. The Affordable Care Act was passed really fast, really partisan, had to be one giant bill, and it was really complicated, and the Democrats tried to address every single problem in it, and lo and behold, it crashed. It turned into a mess from top to bottom. If you're the Republicans, you don't want to make the same mistake. You want to take your time on this because you need Americans to be in a situation where in autumn of 2018, they feel like they're getting a better deal, both in terms of health care and in health insurance, because we've all learned the hard way over the last 8 years that these things are separate. They need to feel like they're, you know, they're getting a better, more reasonable rates, and they need to feel like the quality of care they're getting from the doctors hasn't suffered because of this. Now, Obamacare's got a lot of moving parts. You got the individual mandate, which Tom Price could pretty much take out of commission as soon as he's confirmed. He could either eliminate it entirely, he could reduce it down to almost nothing, or I think the one they're leaning towards is anyone who requests an exemption from the individual mandate citing financial hardship, i.e. I just could not afford health insurance this year, would be granted an exemption. So you would not pay the tax penalty, but you'd have to request it. I don't know how they would do it from a letter or how it would work out, but there'd be that aspect to it. Certain parts like the medical device tax, you can get rid of that pretty quickly. But all of the various ways in which you're trying to give people more options, either through the exchanges or just through a state getting insurance companies to be able to sell across state lines. The short version is you don't want to rush this. And I don't think you want to do this in one giant 2,400-page bill like the Democrats did. You probably want to do this partially through Tom Price's actions. You probably want to do this partially in about a bill you pass about 6 months from now. And you want to implement those changes over a three-year period so that you do not hammer people with sudden changes that hit them out of the blue, i.e., if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. If you like your plan, you can keep your plan. So I don't mind Republicans taking their time on this. Obviously, you got to get it passed by 2018. And ideally, the early side of 2018, not the late side of 2018, because otherwise you'll hear a lot of grumbling in the grassroots. But I don't see this as Republicans dodging their promise to repeal Obamacare. I see this as Republicans realizing just how complicated this is and how much they don't want to mess this up. Because if Republicans mess this up, you let Democrats off the hook. The 2018 midterms go terribly. And oh, by the way, 2018 midterms are a lot of the governors and state legislatures who are going to be in position for redistricting in the next census.
Yes.
So you could end up losing control of state legislatures and House districts and things like that. You could have the headwinds against you for the better part of a decade. So all things considered, this is worth taking your time on. But that's just my opinion. I could be wrong, as Dennis Miller used to say.
I think you're right. I think the urgency that I see is also about the 2018 midterms. But from talking to some of these healthcare experts, it takes a year, maybe two, before folks start to see the changes in the policies when they show up in October, usually right before Election Day. And if the changes get implemented too close to Election Day, it would be, you know, the fall of 2019 by the time some of these things could be seen as being advantageous to consumers. So hard to tell exactly when the dividing line is here when you need to get this stuff done to show the benefits prior to Election Day. It probably sounds callous and crass for us to do it, but that's, trust me, how a lot of the calculations are going here.
You're absolutely right. Working that point. Actually, you're right. As you point out, it's not just that they need to have better policies in place. People need to be feeling better
right.
policies by the time they had the ballot box in November of 2018 or October if they're voting early. So the clock is ticking, but I would argue, you know, you're balancing which terrible mistake you want to make, the mistake of moving too fast or the mistake of going too slow. Hey, is this a great Monday start to the week of these martinis on Monday or what?
Exactly. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.